Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Steve Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Bradley is making a move.
Welcome back to the Running Our Mouths podcast. This week, it's just me and Kevin on the show. Alex Lohr is all tied up with Dream Mile stuff, but we'll catch him this week in the middle of the week for a special Dream Mile episode where we'll preview all the Dream events at the Adidas Grand Prix. Mitch is not available this weekend, and we're going to start off the show talking about the biggest news in track and field in a while, and I think it probably overshadowed this week, some of these this weekend's Diamond League action. And if you haven't heard already, BBC and ProPublica put out this big piece together on former coaches and athletes of Alberto Salazar accusing him of breaking drug rules or pushing things to the limit. So among those are Steve Magnus, Kara Goucher. Seven total athletes were on that. So if you haven't read the article yet by ProPublica or watched the BBC Panorama documentary, be sure to do that. We'll include links to David Epstein's article. But it's a big cloud that's hanging over track and field right now, and especially distance running, because this is a big deal. This is the best distance coach, I think, right now. For U.S. distance running, and the face of American distance running. So right off the bat, Kevin, after you read the story and watched the documentary, what do you think is Alberto Salazar's credibility, if there is any left? Because I'm on the side where, you know, I don't think we're going to see Alberto for a little while. He's going to, you know, take a back seat to things.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing he can show up at a track meet anymore without, you know, being hounded. It not only puts his credibility at stake, we've seen it happen to Mo Farah over at Birmingham when he had his press conference saying that, you know, his name is now under question, all his performances, as well as all the other athletes he coaches now, as well as those he's coached previously. It's just, you know, I understand that the allegations are, you know, some of them are circumstantial, some are just, you know, something written on a piece of paper that someone saw. But regardless of that, in the court of public opinion, he has no credibility in my eyes.
The thing is, let's all be clear right now. As of right now, there are allegations. USADA hasn't come down on anything, and it's interesting because the way we view Steve Magnus and Kara Goucher and everyone we saw in that documentary, everyone who's spoken up right now, they're just, I guess, whistleblowers. And, you know, there's smoke right now coming out of the house. There's a lot of smoke. But there's no smoking gun yet. And that's because I think with Alberto and what we've learned throughout this whole entire the article and the documentary is that he's really, one, we've all known he's probably the most competitive coach. We saw it at USA Indoors. We've seen it in the past. Like, if you've read his book, you know how competitive he was as an athlete. So it's just a competitive nature that he has. But this just takes it to a whole nother level. And the reason why it'll be hard to find a smoking gun is because he's done everything to kind of play things within the gray area and to those limits. I think it definitely has tainted his legacy. And there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. Now, in terms of the documentary, focused a lot on Galen Rupp as well. What do you think is left of Galen Rupp's credibility?
It's very similar. I you know, we saw Mo pull out of Birmingham just because, you know, it felt like he was visibly distracted. And you'd have to think that Rupp is in the same position, and I have a hard time seeing him showing up to the starting line at USA's in, what's that, 3 weeks from now. I have no idea what the reaction of the Hayward Field crowd would be. He's the fan favorite at Oregon, but given all this, I just don't see how he can show up and race.
Think about this. This is a guy who's from the Oregon area. He, you know, went to high school, went to college at Oregon. He's had so many iconic moments in his career at Hayward Field. For him to go back now, the reception he'd get would not be the same as he's had in the past whatsoever. I mean, if he got booed, it'd be something else. I mean, it'd be out of this world. He's not declared for any race right now. I mean, I think I checked that 2 days ago. I could check again to see if Galen Rupp's entered in anything. As of right now, he's not. There's some Oregon Project athletes are entered. Shannon Robery's in for the 1500. There's other names declared. But Galen Rupp's name is not there yet, so there's a chance we won't see him at USA's. I feel like the fact Galen Rupp has known Alberto for so long, I mean, it's a little scary to read in the documents that he possibly started taking testosterone back in high school. I feel like it was just he might have put his trust in the wrong person. Because that relationship, if Alberto happens to go down, I don't see how Galen Rupp also makes it out of this thing. The future's looking ominous for both of them. Another thing to be clear is that Mo Farah has not been linked to anything illegal just yet. There isn't anything. I think David Epstein said it in an interview with a competitor that the reason that Mo isn't linked to anything is because they don't have anything on him. If they did, they would have been there. That's something really clear to note. And I think, what did you make of Mo's statement at the press conferences? And like, I mean, it was great to see him answering the questions. I thought for a second he wasn't even going to show up. But to put him in front of the British journalists who are ruthless, I think they would tear apart their own star. I think he did a great job handling the media. I just don't know if I totally believe him.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly took a lot of courage for him to speak. The one thing that was odd to me was that, you know, he made it seem like he was taken aback in the last couple of days by a lot of these allegations. But, you know, in David Epstein had made a point that BBC contacted the Oregon Project a month ago with the details and asking for a response. So one would think Mo and Alberto and Galen knew about this well before the report came out. So even when they were, you know, at Prefontaine last week. So that fact makes it seem strange that, you know, Mo is now saying that, oh, he just called Alberto a couple nights ago. He wants answers. It seems like if, you know, some of these things were in the works that they would have a more concrete response by this point.
I thought Mo was going to race up until, you know, they made the announcement that he was out. It doesn't surprise me, and I kind of respect the fact that he didn't race. I mean, I respect that he's searching for the answers just like we are. If you're Mo, do you move to a new coach? I feel like the longer he waits to make a move to another coach, just by association, he's going to have to answer these questions, and it's a fair thing to ask as a journalist or someone to ask, why are you still with this guy? If you're Mo Farah, when do you make the move? I think he said he'd be the first once it becomes proven, but do you really think that Galen Rupp and Mo Farah, from what we see in pictures, them playing PlayStation, that they're close? That you, if you're Mo Farah and you find and you read all this stuff, and you hear that your coach is also helping out your, you know, one of your toughest competitors in the 10K, I would say, and you it's like you're not a part of this whole thing. Like it's really tough to believe. Would you? When do you leave if you're Mo Farah?
I think what he said was, you know, appropriate. If there's any concrete evidence out there that, you know, from his own, to save his own back, you know, his own skin sort of thing, that he does have to leave. What he does is kind of, who knows, but I just, I have a hard time believing either of these two guys can continue with the progress of their season leading up to Worlds, given this cloud over them.
Now, another person, we heard from Shannon Robery. Shannon Robery said that, she got to the Oregon Project just recently. I mean, I feel like it's been maybe a year and a half or so by now, and that all this stuff is just before she got there. So, she's staying put right now. She's looking for answers just like us. Now, I think the most interesting character in this whole thing is Mary Kane. She's taking this break from the Oregon Project, and it seems like you're gonna have like she's gonna be on this break for a little while longer. She's training in New York. I mean, if you're Mary Kane, do you leave? Her dad's a doctor, so I mean, to hear this and you being a doctor, I feel like it'd also be surprising.
I don't feel like the fact that she took a leave at the time that she did was a coincidence. I think there was a reason why she left when she left.
Another thing that I'd like to note is that I knew this BBC documentary was coming. I heard from a source about maybe a week and a half or so ago, and it was supposed to air the Wednesday before Prefontaine is what I was hearing. So that would have been interesting. That timing would have been, I think, bad for Nike and the Prefontaine Classic, especially with Mo and Galen being two big stars of that whole thing. So I think the timing was definitely interesting. The reason it didn't air that Wednesday was because the FIFA news broke, and I mean that was just something else that was huge. If Alberto and Galen Rupp, if this story was going to come out, it had to come out the way it did, with BBC and ProPublica working together, especially David Epstein being a part of it. Because if you think about it, if someone like Let's Run, well, first of all, I had heard enough, you know, rumblings about, you know, this gray cloud that hangs over Alberto Salazar, and I feel like, you know, Kevin, maybe you've heard the same. Especially when I went out to Europe, you sit down with athletes and you like at lunch or dinner or something like that, and for some reason someone brings up the Oregon Project, there's always going to be, you know, a hater here or there, and you're going to hear stories, you're going to pick up stories that this person's heard. Eventually you kind of become numb to it, and you're just like, you know, you can't separate what might be a rumor and all that, but you hear enough stuff, and I feel like a lot of people within the running community have heard stuff. And let's say someone like Let's Run, if they were to, they've gathered enough information to put a story like this out there, I just feel like it wouldn't have been as well received by everyone else. ProPublica, BBC, the legal backing that they have is ready for the fallback from Nike and from Alberto's camp. And if you think about it, what did you make out of Alberto's statement? I'll read it to you just really quick right now. So Alberto released a statement, I believe it was to Ken Go of the Oregonian. He said, I'm very disappointed that the BBC and ProPublica and their, quote, reporters, end quote, have allowed themselves to be used by individuals with agendas and have engaged in such inaccurate and unfounded journalism rather than present the facts. They opted for sensationalism and innuendo. Galen Rupp's statement said, I expressly told these reporters that these allegations were not true, and their sources admit they have no evidence, yet they print suspicions attacking me and sullying my reputation. What do you make out of those statements? Because I feel like then Nike released its own statement. It was only 37 words after maybe 5 or so hours after the whole thing. I don't know. If you're Alberto Salazar and you release that statement with reporters in quotes, I don't know if he knows who he's dealing with here. It's David Epstein, the same guy who was a big part of Lance Armstrong, brought down Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah, those are very carefully crafted statements that lawyers drafted. I mean, it's the same tactic we've seen in the past with Armstrong about attacking reporters, trying to attack their credibility. You know, to me, their statements mean little to nothing. I'm much more interested in what the reporting says and if they have particular responses to the allegations, which they didn't.
What was the most surprising part to you of the whole story? I feel like there's so many bullet points you could pick out. If you can pick out of, you know, testing testosterone on his son, you know, the book and the hollowed out pills, you know, that seems straight out of a movie. You know, there's Galen Rupp being trained to answer the questions for therapeutic exemptions. I mean, what surprised you the most of the whole thing?
I think it was just the whole culture of trying to be deceptive, whether that meant, you know, coaching Galen as to how to get a TUE to get an IV, or just rampant disregard for prescription pills and just, you know, handing them around like it's not a big deal. That suggests to me that it may go farther than a single athlete, that if this is the culture within the entire group, that's deeply troubling, because that puts a lot of other people, you know, in the mix for suspicion, including Kara Goucher herself. I certainly applaud her bravery for speaking out if what she's saying has been weighing on her mind heavily. But at the same time, by bringing down Salazar, it also puts her own accomplishments into question. She had her greatest success from, you know, 2007 to 2009 when she was with Alberto. And I think that, you know, just applauding her and not also putting her under the microscope is, I guess, is evaluating the situation too naively.
Yeah, for me, I think it was definitely the, you know, how far back things went. When Magnus saw the charts and saw that he was, Galen Rupp was taking testosterone at the age of 16, like, I think Adam Goucher was the one who said it in the documentary, where he's like, you know, at that point, it seems like it might be child abuse. It's just like, it was scary, because, I mean, I feel like a lot of kids look up to Galen Rupp. You ask a lot of kids who their favorite runner is, Galen Rupp's their guy. And for all this news to come out, I mean, it definitely taints his legacy. I got a tweet from some kid. I mean, it might be in high school. I don't know who he was. Had an Oregon Project singlet on his counter. I was about to light it on fire. Like, it's crazy. Especially since the Oregon Project merchandise and all that, it appeals to kids. There's someone who has a tattoo of the Oregon Project thing on their ankle. I feel like the news needed to come out, and it brings the sport down a little bit. But in order for it to move forward, something like this has to happen.
One note on the testosterone, or the alleged, you know, use of testosterone. I feel like that's the weakest part of the piece, just because it was Magnus seeing one word on a sheet of paper. Everything else felt like, you know, it was some kind of firsthand knowledge. Not saying it wasn't true, but out of everything in the entire piece, I felt like that was the least convincing to me. So just throwing that out there.
I just think maybe the weakest part. I enjoyed listening to Kara on the whole thing, but I think the one part where she said, yeah, you know, Galen said he was tired, and then 4 weeks later comes back and runs like the American record. That being a one-on-one conversation, may or may not have happened. I just think that might have been a little bit weaker. It was, it's just something that I don't think can be proven. But there's so many questions that still need answers, and I think this is just the tip of the iceberg for the Nike Oregon Project. It's going to be interesting the next couple weeks for sure.
Yeah, and with that comes, you know, what do the regulatory bodies do? What does WADA do? What does USADA do? What is, you know, there's been suggestions that the FBI should look into it. To me, you know, seven people have said they've gone to USADA, and yet nothing's happened. That's very strange to me. Why are they not, you know, looking more into these reports? Maybe they are, and maybe this is just a circumstance that the story came in at this time, but it feels like, you know, people like Magnus, people like Goucher, they probably got fed up that they reported the stuff and no action was being made. So it feels like this is kind of a culmination of a lot going on.
You mentioned seven right now. I think there's more. There's definitely, I think there's going to be a couple more that come forward. It just takes the first couple to, you know, get the bravery out of the way. Sooner or later, we're going to probably hear more testimony. And yeah, I think at this point, it's damage control for Alberto Salazar and Galen Rupp, but we'll see what happens before USA's. I don't think we'll see them at Portland Track Festival. There might be some Oregon Project athletes competing there. Probably Pete Julian might take the reins there, but it'll be tough. It's gonna be interesting. On a much lighter note, we'll move into some Diamond League action, some quick hitters. As we said before, we're not going to talk too much about Grant Fisher and his sub four because we might be able to have him on the show this week, being that he'll be in New York and Alex Lohr will be here. So we won't talk too much. Congratulations to Grant Fisher for making it happen. It was a solid race. He was in the mix for the win right until the very end. Jordan McNamara got the W, and I just feel like there wasn't enough recognition for Tyler Purnell, who broke four for the first time as well and also has a pretty strong marathon personal best. So some solid range there. More on Grant Fisher and the Adidas Dream Mile later this week. So now some quick hitters. We're going to keep the show a little bit briefer just because, you know, we want to let this conversation about the Oregon Project sit. And I mean, there's so much more that's going to come out. By the time you listen to this, there might be another update. So we'll just touch on a couple quick things. Jenny Simpson wins in Rome. She holds off Safwan Hassan, it looks to me like she's running every single Diamond League. I think she's run four Diamond League races, and they've all been sub 402 or 403. She's looking strong. Jenny Simpson holds her off. Jenny Simpson's dominance right now. What do you think of her chances for Beijing at this point? As long as she stays healthy, I'm sure she'll run one round of USAs to, you know, make sure she gets her ticket punched. What do you think, Kevin, of the state of Jenny Simpson right now?
Yeah, she looks pretty unbeatable. You know, in previous years, in the really fast races, we've seen her go down to people like Hassan or Gawi. She just hasn't been able to run, you know, the crazy fast, like 356 or 357s. But in a fast race in Rome, she did manage to kick past everyone. And she also, from my perspective, didn't have the best tactics. She was pretty far back in third place with 100 to go. And I actually didn't think she was going to be able to make up the gap on her two opponents, but she did. And hard to imagine her not being at the top of the podium at this point.
You know, it's something I really like about Jenny Simpson is that, you know, now with this Galen Rupp news, we're going to be asking ourselves later on, you know, who's the new face of track and field. Jenny Simpson's got to be up there. I mean, just her accolades at the World Championship stage, you know, how well she's done. Jenny Simpson, I feel like, has to be it on the women's side. And if Galen Rupp is, you know, going to be under suspicion for a while, Jenny Simpson might be the face of American track and field sooner or later. Someone who's not the face of track and field at the moment, and probably won't be just because of, you know, the cloud that hangs over him, Justin Gatlin, wins in Rome above and beyond, head and shoulders over everyone else. He's had luck there, beating Bolt there in 2013. He's so dominant. It's hard to root for him. It's hard to root against him as well. Your thoughts on Gatlin and the statement that he sent this week? Because Bolt's going to run 100, I believe, in New York. I believe it's 100. So we're still having these, you know, separate races. It's again, one-on-one. What does Bolt have to do to really raise your eyebrows?
He's probably going to have to run under, I don't know, 9-8, which I don't see happening. Yeah, the proxy war is heavily on Gatlin. You know, Gatlin's winning the proxy war. And at this point, you know, we talked about it last week, it's hard to see a scenario where Bolt can get fit enough. Although it is the end of August when Worlds is, so it's possible and injuries happen, but Gatlin looks like the man. And on the U.S. sprint side, you know, people like Marvin Brace here coming along, just ran 9.93 in Birmingham. So the race for the spots behind Gatlin is going to be interesting. You're going to have three other guys going to Worlds. Right now, I got to put someone like Tyson Gay on the team, Bracey on the team. And that last spot, you know, between, you know, Ryan Bailey, who's been banged up apparently, and someone like a Mike Rogers, like they could be in the mix, a Trayvon Bromell. Those are kind of the names that have been being thrown around.
Tarmageddon happened again in Birmingham. Of two people to tie in a race, it happened again with Allison Felix and Jenna Botarmo. Tarmo gets the win after further review. Now, we've talked about the new guard and the old guard of U.S. sprinting. Where does Jenna Bataramo fit into this whole thing? Because I feel like she's pretty strong. This might not have been Allison Felix's best race, but Jenna Bataramo is going to have her name in contention as well at USA's.
Yeah, I mean, she's probably, you know, she doesn't have the talent like a Felix does, but she'll be contending most years for a 100, 200 spot. Obviously, a player in the relays, just given how that works. You know, very, very talented individual who works hard, and she'll be in the mix.
Jasmine Stowers didn't have the best trip out to Europe. I mean, it was a great race. We saw Sally Pearson, Brianna Rollins, and her in Rome, and none of them finished the race. A little disappointing. Stowers is stumbling into USA's.
It's a little concerning just because she doesn't have that experience of being able to cope with, you know, bad stuff happening. I'm not saying that today's DQ was a result of, you know, her hitting a hurdle in Rome, but it's a little concerning. We'll see how she fares.
And the MVP of the week, we'll give it to Julius Yego for what a monster of a throw. No one has thrown the javelin as far as he has since 2006. It was 91.39 meters, almost the length of a football field. So I think Julius Yego takes home the MVP of the week. Shout out to him. He learned how to throw javelin on YouTube. But that does it, I think. We're going to wrap up this show pretty fast because Cavs and Warriors is on pretty soon, and we're both wearing our jerseys. So thanks again for tuning in to the Running Our Mouths podcast this week. Later this week, we'll catch you with more stuff from Alex Lohr and the Dream Mile.